My name is Jason.
My name is Fraser.
And this is episode 0 of Song of the Milk White Putrescence. So what is this exactly? In 2017, IGM did a Dungeon World campaign, and Fraser played in all of it, a campaign called We Hunt the Keepers. It consisted of 26 three-hour sessions spread out over 7 different series. Song of the Milk White Putrescence is the first of those 7 series. Fraser has edited down each of these 10 to 12 hour series into about a dozen episodes, 20 to 30 minutes each, following the format of our other show, Pocket Size Play. So what we're giving you is basically Song of the Milk White Putrescence is us playing Dungeon World, but with all of the pauses and breaks and other things edited out and the flow of the conversation tightened up a little bit for easy listening enjoyment. For this episode 0, we're going to talk about some different things, kind of reflect on the whole series. But before we begin, I want to just give a brief description of the premise of the overall campaign, We Hunt the Keepers, because I think it's important to understand what it is before you go into listening to these. We Hunt the Keepers was basically the pretext for having open table Dungeon World gaming. So we would run these series, like I said, about, you know, they're about 4-ish sessions each, and the player characters would kind of switch between each series, and so we didn't have like a completely consistent table throughout all 26 sessions. And so we always had to have a good reason for these mixed groups of characters to be together. And the premise of We Hunt the Keepers is that reason. Now, in every adventure, in every series, the player characters had their own motivations for being on that particular adventure. But they were all together initially because of the of what We Hunt the Keepers was all about. So the idea is, in our campaign world, there's this vast bureaucratic church. It touches every aspect of life. It is Byzantine. It's corrupt. And within this church, there is a heretical sect. Not really within the church anymore. There's a heretical sect called the Keepers. And these Keepers, these monks that were heretics, they studied these people, places, and objects that we call the Keys. And the church feared that these monks, these Keepers, were engaged in some kind of conspiracy, some kind of apocalyptic conspiracy. And so the player characters represented people who were hired to travel to different parts of the world and hunt these monks down and kill them and retrieve the key or secure the key in some way if they could. So that was the reason why they were all together. Part of the pleasure of this campaign was figuring out what that conspiracy was. I, as the GM, did not know what it was, and we spent a fair amount of time, both in the fiction and as a sort of meta process out of the fiction, discussing what we thought the conspiracy was, and that was a lot of the real fun there. So, now, that is the setup. I am going to throw to Fraser to introduce the characters that were in this particular series of We Hunt the Keepers, Song of the Milk White Putrescence.
So there's 4 characters. The first one is Logan, who was played by David Lafreniere, who was using the mage playbook in a way that I hadn't ever seen before, although admittedly I hadn't really seen the mage playbook in play that much. But Logan uses his robes in very interesting ways to cast spells and is very much driven by getting more power, and also a connection to a character that we'll later meet in this series. Kravis is played by Lowell, and he is a Templar who is a very sassy but well-meaning short dwarf who takes it on the chin for his height pretty often. He's also, it's interesting because he's really interested in upholding very specific strictures of his faith, but not at all with others, and I constantly jive him for that during the series, so enjoy that. Archon is a scion who is played by Garrett, and he is all about emotional play. In this one, he's particularly looking for a specific emotion and seeking that out in all the other compatriots, the party members. But also this idea that there's a whole bunch of creatures in the world where they sort of have domain over these daily things that we fear and want to kill, but are manifestations of creatures, apparently. And finally, there's Weary, the thief, who is played by me. I'm a member of the Shadow Court, which has an ulterior motive going on throughout it, where I am sort of like infiltrated this party to further my own aims, and I somewhat succeed sometimes. It depends on my roles, and that gave birth to what we're calling in the fiction as Light Callers. So I'm excited for everybody to hear about that.
Awesome. We should also mention that Archon was a dwarf as well. So,
oh, right.
That was a good summary of the characters. Thank you. Let's talk about highlights. Just some things that in Song of the Milk White Putrescence stuck out to us because, you know, we played this, it's been like 9 months ago or something when we played it, maybe even longer. But now we've re-listened to it again in preparation for this project. And so I just want to kind of see like what your thinking was after you listened to this series and also played in the entire campaign. What were some of the highlights for you?
For the whole campaign or just this one series?
Yeah, either or both. It's fine.
Well, for this one in particular, I had a good time listening to it again because I am so clearly fish out of water in this. Like, all the players really come together to help bring me into the tropes of D&D because I'm very much, like, floundering. Like, when I'm asking people what a Templar is and stuff, and everyone's like, that's a part of history, not D&D. And I'm like, oh. That kind of stuff. But, I thought everybody brought me into the D&D-ish of it, while everybody else was very much driving their own fiction, and that gave me a lot of license to do some of my bullshit.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, too. You not having much of no D&D background and not much fantasy background either. Like, the tropes of the genre were not, like, at the front of your mind. I don't, you know, personally, I know you felt that way as you were playing your character. It didn't really... like, to me, it didn't really come across that way. Like, I mean, it was pretty clear that, like, you know, the rest of us kind of, like, know D&D, right? And, you know, we could speak to certain things. But even Garrett, like, he didn't really play D&D. He played this Dark Eye, right? Which is German, just German D&D, to be fair. But so I don't think it came across that way. What I did think was interesting about the way you played your character is because you didn't come from that D&D frame, you actually made a thief that was quite different than the standard sort of dungeon crawly thief, right?
Yeah, I think it even jived a little bit with the playbook and against it in some other ways where I was like trying to get some fictional positioning that didn't exist in the playbook, but then we sort of just worked it into the fiction otherwise.
You played him kind of like Assassin's Creed-ish, right?
Definitely, right. I was like, what is a thief? It must be Assassin's Creed, right? Because D&D doesn't exist in my brain, so that's exactly where I went.
One thing you did that I enjoyed as I was listening to it that wasn't as apparent to me when we were playing, but listening back to it, I'm really aware of it, is you would like take control of the fiction like the director of a movie. You would say, oh, we see the camera move over here. The camera moves over there. I thought that was pretty great.
Yeah, I'm very much into making it a TV series or a movie. A
cinematic play, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why Archon's character is so unique too, right? Because he said that his idea of what the Scion was very different than D&D, and he was playing it like that, and then everybody was like, oh.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. Well, you know, one thing I thought was interesting about Archon, and this is something I know both of us have in our notes here, kind of, you know, when we're talking about, like, emotional play, you kind of mentioned that about that character in the beginning. Archon was a tricky character to wrap my head around in the beginning, right? And when you listen to these first few episodes especially, you can hear me not being totally sure what to do with Archon, right? Because Garrett wanted to take his character... You know, Garrett didn't want to do the standard D&D stuff so much. He wanted to take his character in this really wild, emotional, spiritual, almost cosmic space, right? And that was really interesting because, for one thing, it made me adjust my thinking about what kind of game this was going to be. And also, a lot of the bigger campaign fiction, we really had to, like, shape it based off Archon's play, or based off how Garrett played Archon, because there was no way to not make the story about big cosmic things because of the way that Garrett played Archon, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's interesting now knowing what has played out for the entire series, what all these characters have contributed to the fiction, especially in this first series. Like, it really, like, it's really exciting because you can really see the germination of all these different ideas and all of these characters and what people have put into the fiction. Like, all of them. Even Kravis's idea of what a Templar is and how they interact with the faith shaped a lot about the faith later on.
It really did. Yeah. Yeah, it did. Well, that kind of segues nicely into some of the highlights that I had. Song of the Milk-White Putrescence is very much a beginning, right? You can tell a little bit when we're sitting down to play, we don't really have any strong sense of what this campaign is even about or where it's even headed, right? We have a little adventure we're doing, and that's kind of it, you know? The main campaign arc eventually spreads out to be this, like, really deep, almost terrifying conspiracy, right? But in these early days, we're just kind of figuring all that out. And, you know, like you said, little bits, things that happen in Song of the Milk-White Putrescence end up becoming very important down the road. Like, they're things we don't think about for months in real world time and, you know, a dozen sessions or so in game time. But later on, we begin to, like, draw back, look back, make those connections. And I love that about this. Now, here's the thing. Like, if you don't know the campaign, those things aren't going to stick out to you right away. But just know that, like, this particular story, when you're listening to it, you're like, well, where does this fit? Like, what is actually, what is this? Like, where is this going? But stick with it, and you're going to see down the road how it all starts to come together. It's very, very cool. So I like that about it.
The thing that I like about it, too, is that, like, the recording must have started a little bit later after we made characters, and it sort of sets up the first few episodes really nicely because we begin in media res and we find out about the characters while they're doing stuff, and it makes for, like, a really interesting opening for a series, I think.
No, I agree completely. Some of the things I loved about this, the party dynamics are really fun in Song of the Milk-White Putrescence. It's fun to see these players, none of whom had played Dungeon World together before. In Lowell's case, had never played Dungeon World. And I think even Garrett had never played Dungeon World. As a GM, it was really enjoyable to watch you guys as players kind of figure each other out, you know, and figure out your play styles. And it was fun to watch you guys figure out where your character fit in the party and, like, how they interacted with the other characters. You know, like, all beginnings, like, all new things, it's a little stumbly at times, and there's some inconsistencies, you know, here and there. But overall, you see this, like, nice blending, this melding as the characters kind of come alive, as you guys sort of learn how to live in their skin, you learn how to live with each other. Really, really great to watch. I love that. And I think it just kind of goes down to, like, one of my other main points that I love about this series. This is just us playing Dungeon World. We didn't originally record this for entertainment purposes. It's just our hangout audio, so it's not, like, you know, our normal, you know, like, audio quality on our other podcasts, but it's still perfectly listenable. We didn't intend for that to be an entertainment, right? And so the fact that it is entertaining and the fact that there is this cool story going on is really enjoyable. But I just love that it's, like, us playing Dungeon World, and you get to really see, like, just what a group that's having a good time playing Dungeon World sounds like, right? Without it being a big yuck fest or whatever, right? Like, you know.
Yeah, it's also interesting because we get to hit on some of the stuff that I think people like about D&D actual plays and Dungeon World actual plays, which is a lot of the player dynamics around humor, but it's all for us, right? Like, there's no performative aspect of it at all.
Right, yeah. When you listen to it, you can hear us enjoying each other's company, right? Like, it's a pure, like, we're just enjoying each other, entertaining each other, and having a good time. I agree. I know there are lots of, like, really nice comedy podcasts out there. There are lots of not so great comedy podcasts out there for AP. There's a spectrum of, like, how good they are, whether they're entertaining. But ultimately, they're performative, right? Like, they are meant to be an entertainment. They are not, they're not really play, in my opinion, in some ways, right? And so, yeah, I think you're right there. One other thing I'll say, this is kind of piggybacks off what you just said. There's a really interesting sort of narrative and tone shift that takes place in the middle of Song of the Milk White Putrescence. It starts out kind of lighthearted, right? Even comic. Like in the first few episodes especially, there's a lot of humor. And I think that is because as we as players are kind of getting used to each other, we're using humor to kind of like get through the awkwardness and the nervousness, you know, of our play. And so it has like a bit of a lighthearted feel in the beginning, but boy, it shifts, right? Like it has this 2/3 of the way through, it shifts to be this darker thing, this more mysterious situation, very cosmic even, like, you know, like different planes of existence kind of thing. It really, really shifts in terms of the type of story it is and the tone it is. It's almost like the beginning is like a setup, you know, to kind of like trick you in the last part, right? And I really like that. And indeed, the whole campaign is that way. I mean, the whole campaign, it just gets more and more dark and terrifying and bizarre. And I like it.
Going on about Garrett, but I think a lot of it is due to Garrett because he really creates this space where he is very vulnerable and like willing to do emotional play. And when he asked me to be a part of a particular scene with him, you can really see the germinations of whatever I come up with in the scene really is kind of the arc of all of Weary for the whole rest of the series. And it's only because Garrett asked me a very particular question and invited me to play a scene with him.
True.
Like, so everything is so emergent and interesting and fun.
Awesome. Well, let's turn the listeners loose. Great little introduction. Episode 1 is on its way, listeners. Enjoy.